the Michigan Playoff HockeyCast 3.24. We have some seesaws, some blowouts, and time to do or die. Alexander, your fame continues.
I actually have something to add to that.
Okay.
You don't even know what I'm going to say. I was recognized at the Comerica Park at the Tigers game I was at as a Twitter celebrity.
That's what I was going to say.
Oh.
It's literally in my notes here. The Tigers responded to your tweet.
Oh, no, it wasn't that. It was a guy who follows me on Twitter who said, hey, I'm in section 324, row 18, and I was in section 323,
yes!
row 17.
Yes. Did you go talk to him?
I did. Yeah. Well, so he said, hey, wave. And I, you know, got up and waved. And then in between the innings, he came over and talked to me.
What does he follow you for? Softball?
Just baseball. I mean, like,
okay.
He's a big Tigers fan.
Oh, so it's for Tigers. It wasn't even Michigan?
Yeah. No, I wrote a few Tigers stories in the past for different outlets and stuff. He's a good guy. But
And the Tigers responded
the Tigers
to your
responded
actual tweet.
To my actual tweet. I know.
Was that a bigger deal? To be recognized by a Major League Baseball team
as
a fan in the stands?
It was quite an experience. And it was a 10-inning game that the Tigers won. So the highlight of the game was we were sitting there, and the Tigers had two on and two outs, or two on and one out, I think it was. And I think, you know, it was like 0-2 count on the batter at the plate. Mm-hmm. And then the people behind us are like, don't worry, Miguel Cabrera is up on deck. And then the other person's like, well, that used to be a good thing.
That is pretty funny. Are they still on pace for the worst run differential
ever? No,
they
actually won some games this past week. So,
have they given up more runs than the Blue Jays have injuries?
They have definitely given up more runs.
That's like half of your slacks to me now.
Yeah, I know.
Or like, who's injured on the Blue Jays?
Yeah. It was a good day for baseball, by the way, though, and I encourage anybody who wants to go to get out there and go to Comerica Park. It's a fun experience.
Despite the Tigers.
But they won.
They have won more games, like
yes.
You've been saying.
And
if you do it right, you might get recognized.
Although I would say definitely choose to go to a game against a bad team, because we went on Saturday against the Cubs, and the Cubs obviously have a big fan base, especially a big fan base in Michigan.
But they're not exactly good.
Tickets were outrageous.
Oh, because of...
There's not very many. But yeah. If I had wanted to go on Wednesday against the Royals at 1 p.m., tickets were $9.
But that's the point, is no one wants to go see the Royals.
So that's my story at the Tiger game.
That's a pretty intense weekend, at least via Twitter. You got to meet a fan.
Yeah, I know.
Has that ever happened to you?
Not really. Well... I met Griff and Stu from softball sometimes.
You did?
They would come up to me and stuff. One of my other friends, they ran into him at Pancheros and had a conversation. But
that's kind of cool. I've had people comment to me in person about things I've said on the MGO podcast before.
Well, you don't have any photos of yourself on Twitter, so people don't know what you look like. I don't know what
I don't?
You look like.
Oh, yeah. Well, we do this in separate rooms, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, so you had a good weekend of baseball live, but... Michigan also, I would say, had a good weekend of baseball. I mean,
I said 2 out of 3 was a reasonable hope, and that was what happened.
But I mean, when you go into a series like this, I mean, yeah, you want to sweep, but like good major league teams don't always sweep series. You're going to lose one because baseball can be random. And actually, I would say that Michigan hit well enough to win all the games.
Probably, yeah. Bullpen meltdown on Saturday, but otherwise,
yeah. Well, we'll start on Friday, and this was a nice outing, I think, from Hadjer. It was not what he did against State, but Indiana's offense is a little bit better.
You know, I was at that game, and he definitely was battling command problems for quite a bit of it, which is what I thought made it a decently impressive performance.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he had the fastball working, but his breaking pitches were really low. They were bouncing in quite a bit, weren't getting many swings and misses. But he hung in there, and he went pretty deep into the game, especially on a high pitch count. I think he finished over 110 pitches on the game.
Yeah.
And he kept going after. I thought they were going to take him out.
Well, he went 6 1/3, 6 hits, 3 runs,
yeah.
4 walks is what you were referring
yes.
to. That was probably the key. And then but he did have 8 Ks. So, I mean, that's fine from a number one starter against a team like Indiana. I mean, Indiana's, what, one of the top 2 or 3 teams in the Big Ten and have been all year.
And he ran into a little bit of trouble in the third, but the one you know RBI hit he gave up in that inning was a sort of, it wasn't quite bloop, but it was a tailing liner into left center, and I thought Bullock had a really bad read on the ball. He started back and started to his right, and it was to his left, and it was really shallow and to his right. I mean, he went in the complete opposite direction.
That's weird.
On his first step, and I think if he had made a proper first step, he might have gotten there. So overall, I was happy with Hadjer.
And they go to the bullpen, and Isaiah Page comes in, and he pitches really, really well, going 2 2/3, 4 hits.
He did give up 4 hits. I thought he wasn't as sharp as he has been, and he allowed the inherited runner in the 7th to score. But, you know, it was a low-leverage situation, right?
Yeah.
It was a 9-2 game at the time he came in, and, you know.
But he also had 4 strikeouts in less than 3 innings. I mean, we'll get to Game 3 and the Game 3 starter in a little bit. But Denner in the past, before this weekend, has had some issues. And like when I was writing these notes, I was like, you know, is it plausible to think of him as a third or fourth starter?
Who?
Page.
Page? I mean, I think he's best suited in the bullpen roles.
Sure, but...
Just like, because of what we saw on Saturday and the struggles in the bullpen, you need a guy like him to be able to be a long-ish man in late-game situations.
I agree with that. The only issue is when they get to the regional, which is what you're really playing for and all this. I mean, you're probably going to need a fourth starter.
Maybe. I mean, you probably.
I mean, unless you just win 3 games.
Yeah.
Which you could.
Which you could.
But chances are you're going to have to win a couple extras.
Yeah.
And is he a candidate for that? Because Beers was the fourth starter early on, right? And that isn't the case anymore. Dragani is another option.
I think Dragani would be your best option in that situation.
Over Page, you think?
I think I just like the flexibility he gives you.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. The next note I have is bombs, because Michigan kept hitting home runs on Friday. Burton had one. Measure, what, had a 3-run homer, and then I think Elliott tacked one on later.
Well, the game really hinged in that third inning where Michigan had fallen down 2-1. They come right back, and Tommy Sommer just kind of falls apart, and... Michigan has, I think it was 4 straight RBI singles that just moved everybody up 90 feet over and over again. And, you know, that put him ahead 6-2. And then, of course, the Mazur 3-run shot in the fourth, that kind of put the game away at 9-2.
Yeah.
And I thankfully wasn't doing play-by-play for this game. So I was outside on the deck. And
sunning? Were you bronzing?
It was a beautiful day on Friday. It was a beautiful day all weekend.
All weekend, yeah.
Sunday was a little drizzly at the start of the game, but got better. So I was just outside enjoying the weather, and
just like you were on Saturday.
I was in a nice chair, and it was an enjoyable time.
Yeah, Measure, Sims, Burton, and Flores had those 4 hits in the third inning. So you get, I mean, Measure gets a 3-run homer, so he's more, I guess, the hitting star of the game, but you get a lot of hits from a number of different players, and that's kind of been Michigan's thing.
Oh, and also Teddy Burton and Clark Elliott had solo shots
to open and cap
the scoring. So.
Right. So a big hitting day, a solid pitching day, leads into Saturday where Cameron Weston pitches, and he only goes 5 innings, 4 hits, 4 runs. One of them was only one was earned, though. 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. Not exactly what he did last weekend with a 1-hit complete game shutout. But only 1 run gets charged to him?
I didn't get to see this game, but you know my understanding is that there was some real rough fielding in that third inning where things kind of went awry. And credit to Michigan... For battling back a little bit. I mean, really the problem was the fact that Logan Wood gave up 3 runs.
Right.
Because that if they kept it at 4-0 into the 7th, Michigan had a shot to win this game. But once it spilled to 7-0, it became even harder to come back from. And again, give them credit. They put 5 up in the 5th and made it a little more interesting. I mean, the real concern, though, is that your 2 late-inning guys in Pace and Weiss just really had bad games.
Right. Wood, Pace, and Weiss, they were all not great. They combined 2 1/3, 6 hits, 9 runs, 4 walks, 3 strikeouts. I mean, when your bullpen does that, you don't really have a chance. And like what you were saying about the runs, it was really interesting, is you have it was 4-0 after 3, and then 7-0 going into the 7th or the bottom of the 7th, and they get, or 6 maybe it was, and it becomes 7-5. So they're back in the game. And they have a chance, and then that's when the Hoosiers get 6. And then it ends up being 13-8 Indiana. Molfetta, Elliott, and Obertop all go 2 for 5, and they all have plural RBIs. 7 combined between those 3 guys. Burton also was 2-for-4 with a walk and 2 runs scored. So again, Michigan's hitting well in these situations. They get 8 runs. Maybe if their fielding is a little bit better, they get a little better bullpen help, they can get that win and then eventually earn the sweep. But, you know, it's college baseball, like you've been saying, as long as we've been covering Michigan baseball now, that it's kind of random and it's hard to depend on a lot of stuff. And getting full-on sweeps, unless you're playing somebody who's really not great, is going to be tough.
Yeah.
And so then transitioning to Sunday, this was going to be a big game because Michigan really needed this. I honestly guess both teams needed it because we'll get into the scheduling later. But, you know, they're hosting Indiana. They had a chance to win the Big Ten against Indiana, 2 years ago at home and really kind of dropped the ball going, I think, 1-2.
Yep.
And it set them back and they ended up not winning the conference because of it. So coming out and winning on Sunday is going to be a big step towards that. And that's essentially what Michigan did is Denner, who has not been great as of late, had a really nice bounce back effort. I thought I watched a lot of this game. He went 6 1/3, 4 hits, only 1 run, which was like a looping lining home run, and only 1 walk, which has been a lot of his downfall this year, has been giving free passes, 6 strikeouts. And I mean, if you're going to get that kind of an effort out of your third starter, I mean, Michigan's got to be thrilled going into the postseason in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that was a really gutty performance from Denner. Again, I didn't get to see a lot of this because I was over at softball on Sunday. But, you know, everything that the Lions score shows is a really good performance, only giving up the solo homer to Colopy. And, you know, again, this was expected to be a low-scoring series. Didn't really materialize. I mean, Michigan in total puts up, 20 runs in 3 games off the Indiana pitchers, which for a team with the best ERA by quite a bit in the conference in the Hoosiers was a little surprising. But, you know, you get a good start, you capitalize, and you get some big hits. I think the big thing is sort of the manufacturing of runs, right?
Yeah.
Mazur scores a run on a sac fly. Burton comes home on a wild pitch, and two runs come in the eighth off a throwing error. I mean, just capitalizing on mistakes, doing the little things. And then you still get some big runs, couple of RBI doubles for Tito Flores, who had a great game offensively, and your pitching does the job, and Willie Weiss came in late and did an okay job, got 1 big strikeout, but then had to be relieved for Will Proctor.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, is that when you get to the 7th inning here, the first guy out of the bullpen is Beers.
Yeah, which was surprising.
And he comes in and gets a couple ground balls and gets out of the jam, which was, like you said, very surprising.
Yeah, and then you have Weiss.
Then you go to Weiss. And so my thought on this is, all right, it's 3-1, you bring your closer in the 8th, and he gets a strikeout to start the inning.
Yeah.
Then he gives up back-to-back walks. Now, if you go to your closer in the 8th inning, aren't you riding or dying with this guy? Like, this is not...
It depends on who your closer is. I mean, I think a manager has to have flexibility and can't be buttonholed into specific roles. That you have to be able to use the right guy in the right situation. And, you know, Willie Weiss has been really good this season, but he's not Mariano Rivera, right?
Like, sure.
Guys are going to struggle, and you have to be willing to say we've got a different guy who might have better success. And they found that guy in Will Proctor.
Well, he came in and got 2 more ground balls, and they get out of the inning, which was a great sign for the bullpen, especially after the previous day. Michigan adds on, they get 2 huge defensive gaffes from Indiana in the bottom of the 8th, a dropped pop-up behind 2nd, and then a weird throw from the 2nd baseman. I don't know if you saw the replay of this, but it's a bouncing ball where the 2nd baseman has to charge, and he fields it. I think he can't get it out of his glove, and then he John Navarre's a screen pass to Chris Perry from like 10 feet away and goes like flying right off of the 1st baseman's glove, and 2 runs come around to score, and then it's 6-1, and that's pretty much it from that point. But you know, it was a nip and tuck game for a long time until Indiana sort of broke down defensively.
Yeah, and I mean, again, overall you get your 2 wins and you're still right in the hunt going into the last 2 weekends.
I feel like we've been looking at the updates of the baseball standings for about a month now, and we may as well not have, because nothing has really
changes, which is kind of why Michigan needs at least 1 sweep in these final 2 series.
Well, so they host Maryland coming up, and you put an interesting note in our podcast notes saying that Maryland is 14-2 in their last 16 games.
Yeah, they're suddenly actually have a chance to win the conference.
Yeah. I mean, you look at, and I looked at their standings, and they're 24-14, which is just 1 game behind Michigan.
After they were 10-12.
Yeah. Because Michigan played them right in split, I believe, earlier.
Yep. I mean, Maryland knows how to score runs. That's what's coming up this weekend, and we remember what happened earlier in the season, the Grizzly game where Michigan gave up, what was it, 18 or 20 runs against Maryland.
Jeez.
That game where the bullpen just kind of crumbles. But that was the fourth game of a four-game series. This is a more conventional three-game set where you don't have to deal with that bullpen day. But, I mean, they've got everything going right now. Their pitching is still in the middle of the conference, fifth in ERA, but their OBP is up to number three. They're right at the top of the conference in homers. They score a ton of runs. They translate base runners into runs really well. This is another series where you need, you know, another great effort from Denner. You need Weston to bounce back, and you need your ace to be the guy.
Not to mention probably some bullpen help, as we saw on Friday and Sunday, that can be there.
But you'll have some opportunities to hit, too. So that's an important thing to keep in mind.
So they get Maryland. The other interesting note is that basically the other two teams in contention, Indiana and Nebraska, play each other. And Ohio State, who's really not that far behind anyone else.
Yeah.
All three of those teams are in one of those three-team pod 2-2-2 deals. Or four. They all play four, but two against everybody else.
You ever done that like dance thing where you dance with someone and then like you take another partner
Isn't
and then
like
you dance around?
Dancing?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Did you do that?
Not really, but that's what this kind of is. You play a team, then you go over and play another
play team,
and then you go back to the other. Yeah.
Do-si-do with like Ohio State and Indiana and Nebraska. So they're all going to be playing. The other thing that's interesting is Indiana has a random Tuesday game against Illinois, who is the team that isn't a great team, but they can hit the ball.
Yeah, they can hit.
And that can turn into a score fest quickly. So if Illinois can knock off Indiana, that would be a great help to Michigan going into that weekend. I think at that point, like you said in the other note you said is, get ready to be the biggest OSU fans in the world, because essentially we want them to go 4-0.
We love the Buckeyes.
I maybe don't go that far, but I will root for them to win a few baseball games this weekend as Michigan plays Maryland. So it's still not a whole lot is probably going to be decided, because looking at the next weekend, which will be the final weekend, Michigan goes to Lincoln, and I believe Maryland plays Indiana. So whoever set this schedule up, someone should buy them a drink or give them a raise, because this is exactly what you want at the end of the season, where you have the top four teams in the division all playing each other for the right to essentially, it's the right to hang a banner now, because you're not even going to get seeding in a tournament. I mean, the NCAA tournament, but not the Big Ten tournament, because obviously it doesn't exist this year.
Michigan's back in the top 25 this week. Really no chance to host a regional, but as we've talked about many times, that doesn't really matter in baseball. So keep winning. Keep the momentum going.
Right. You just want to get a good draw, I guess, as best you can, whatever that
means. Even that is, yeah.
So you were over doing a softball game as well. We previewed this series very shortly. Michigan faced Rutgers, and I believe the first three games were combined 27-0.
And if you even add in the final game, it was a 29-1 four-game aggregate.
Well, that
score.
Was actually a softball game.
Yeah.
You had 3-0 in
so,
the first game.
Rutgers had one pitcher, Ashley Hitchcock, who was decent, and she kept Michigan from really cracking it open in two of the games, the 3-0 and 2-1 defeat. Yeah.
And then the last game.
She did a solid job. Michigan's A pitchers were, they did their job. I'll just say that. The only run Rutgers got was a solo homer off of Sarah Schaefer. Hutch started Schaefer on senior day as a nice send-off from the program,
She also started a few other seniors too, correct?
Yes, Thais started. I'm trying to remember if there was anybody else in the lineup that was unusual, but obviously Hogenrod was there. It was a different lineup. You could tell it was a situation where they felt very good about their chances of beating Rutgers, regardless of who they played, and, they were right.
Yeah.
A little more stressful than you would have liked with the Lou Allen home run in the sixth, putting Michigan in the lead for good, but they brought Starocco in the fourth, and, she did her job. And overall, the other thing to note, we should note, is that Megan Bobian threw a five-inning perfect game in the second game on Saturday.
So the game three of the four-game set. And it's the eighth, I believe, in Michigan history?
Something like
That's
that.
That's what I've heard.
Sarah Schaefer has one of them, if I remember correctly.
Really?
Way back, her freshman year in 2018. It was either that or no-hitter, but I think it was a perfect game.
Okay.
Either way, it was against Robert Morris.
It still counts.
So anyway, Michigan does their job. They win their four games, just like we said.
Yep.
And we go into the selection show last night, Which, you know, I'm pretty happy with the way the selection show went, to be honest.
So before we get to that, what did Michigan finish on the year?
Like 36-6.
So they're 36-6. So they're winning what, 6 out of 7 games?
Yeah, good math.
I did go to Michigan, Alexander.
So anyway, you know, I was happy that they unveiled the top 8 regions in the first like 10 minutes. One commercial break, they came back and did the other 8. I mean, it was very efficient. So happy about that. Michigan was placed into the Seattle Regional. They were one spot away from hosting a regional.
So they're the 17th seed.
The 17th seed, correct.
Which is, that is what the polls had said essentially going into this past weekend, right?
My feeling is that Michigan not hosting and Michigan getting number 17, I don't have any issue with, I don't have much issue with that. That was a very plausible outcome. That's what we'll say. It was a very plausible outcome. The coaches' poll mostly saw that coming, et cetera.
Yeah.
No real issue. I think it screwed the Big Ten not getting to play other teams, but based on only playing a Big Ten schedule and winning 36 games, I think Michigan probably is right around a reasonable spot there. You know, if you don't drop those early games to Illinois, maybe you're 15th or something. But it is what it is. I don't have a major problem with that.
With finishing 17th?
Yeah.
Okay.
The major problem, and I, by the way, am not that outraged. I would be very
Do you get outraged? What have you been outraged by?
Armando Galarraga losing the perfect game.
Oh, man.
Anyway, I would be outraged if I were a Washington Huskies fan. Don't know what happened there, but it's baffling. Absolutely baffling.
Is this two Atlantic hockey teams in the NCAA tournament baffling?
So, first off, every Pac-12 team except UCLA got underseeded relative to the coaches' poll. Arizona, I think, was 8, and they got 11. Arizona State was 11, and they got 15, maybe. But Washington was 5th and got number 16.
They were 5th?
They were 5th in the coaches' poll. And they and by the way, this is not a program that, you know, it's not like they're a paper tiger and they fall on their face in the tournament. They made the Women's College World Series 3 straight years, including the runner-up 2 years ago.
Yeah, they've had a good program for a while.
This is one of the best programs in the country by far.
And they got the 16th seed?
They got the 16th seed. And so, you know, Michigan got a tough draw, no question. But if I'm Washington and I'm sitting there, and not just were you 16, but you're drawing Michigan when you should be getting a team that's a lot worse than that, and if you win, you have to play Oklahoma in the Supers.
What are the odds that Oklahoma doesn't make it out of their regional?
0.01%.
That high? Well, aren't they like 42-2?
Yeah. They're
like team batting average like is like 400. Yeah. That's insane.
The next closest team in team batting average is like 360. It's not, it's ridiculous.
That's
anyway,
absurd.
So Washington, who is this excellent program and a very good team, just got absolutely pummeled by the selection committee. I mean, just a brutal draw. Absolutely brutal.
Yeah, because going into last weekend, they're probably thinking, we got a shot to get a top 4 seed.
And Michigan, it's unfortunate because even though we, I think, got a reasonable seed, you want to be playing a team a lot easier than Washington for the 16th seed.
Yeah.
I mean, I would take Duke. I'd take Arizona State, for God's sakes. I'd take a lot of teams who were seeded higher than Washington over Washington every day of the week.
Yeah, you want, as a 17, you want to think, hey, we have almost as good a chance to get out of this regional as our host.
Yeah.
Because we're about the same team.
Yeah.
That is not apparently the case.
I mean, I think it's hard to compare any teams, and I do think Michigan has a shot to win this, but this is the type of team you wanted to play in the Supers, not in the regional.
Right. So, instead, who would they play in the Supers?
So anyway, Carol Hutchins was really angry in yesterday's post tournament selection show media availability. She said that the conference had been disrespected, which I thought was
true?
Pretty fiery. I mean, she's always been a big advocate for the Big Ten.
Yeah.
The Big Ten only got 3 teams in. Minnesota is the 2 in the number 2 regional. Northwestern is the 3 in the number 14 regional, which if you do the math means they barely made it in.
Hmm. Is there anyone else in the Big Ten that...
I thought Illinois should have been in.
You did?
That was my personal opinion.
Okay.
I mean, the Big Ten normally gets 4 to 6 teams in. Hutch was pretty clearly believing that there is SEC bias. And look, the SEC is the best conference, no question. But the SEC didn't get to play any of the other conferences either. And I don't really know how you can objectively say that the SEC is a lot better than the Pac-12. And the Pac-12 got really screwed. And the SEC didn't. I don't understand that. I think the Pac-12 is just as good of a conference with the programs they produce. Mm. But anyway, taking a look at Washington, again, I don't know how they're that seed, because a lot of the stuff checks out to me. They've got seven hitters in their most recent game who started with a 900 OPS or better, which is very good.
Yeah.
They've got three hitters with over 10 homers. They're ninth in the country in batting average, ninth in team on base, 20th in homers per game, 19th in runs per game, scoring over six per game, playing in a good conference.
So did they play any non-conference games?
They did. Most all conferences did, but very few against like the big conferences. A lot of them played the little teams.
Local schools
and
such?
Yeah, stuff like that.
All right.
And, you know, Washington isn't as good of a pitching team on the whole, but they've got a bona fide ace who is very, very good in Gabby Plain. I mean, she's a senior. She's been with them through all of their previous Women's College World Series trips as the starter in some of those. 1.19 ERA, 0.77 whip, again, playing in a great conference. I mean, she is excellent, and I would not expect to see anyone besides her in the circle facing Michigan.
So do you think that they'll start someone else in the first game?
Probably.
And then they'll save her for the second game? And Michigan probably pitches, I would say, Bobian and then save Starocco.
I think you're going to see both used a lot, and I think you're going to mix and match depending on situations.
Okay.
And I think that you can't afford either to be off at any moment, which is when I think there might have to be a quick hook.
Mm.
But
you don't feel that way about the rest of the regional, do you? I mean, who's Michigan going to play first?
So Michigan plays Seattle U first.
Which is clearly there because of
geographic reasons.
Right.
Yeah. That game is Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2.
Okay.
So, you know, Seattle, again, it's tough to judge any teams because so few teams played other teams. What I can say is that Seattle U, if Michigan is losing to Seattle U on Friday, that's a very bad sign.
And they're probably not beating Washington.
They have no shot
anyway.
Of beating Washington if they're losing to Seattle U.
And who is Washington playing?
Portland State. Don't worry about them. Seattle U was the WAC tournament champion. They went 11-5 in conference play. The WAC is not really a super great school. I mean, Seattle U's made the tournament in the past. They played 9 non-con games against the Pac-12 for geographic reasons. They went 1-8 in those games. They only beat Oregon State, who is one of the worst Pac-12 teams. They faced Washington, actually. They lost 9-1 on aggregate in the two games. I mean, again, if Michigan has a shot to beat Washington, they should have no problem
against
Seattle.
They're going to beat Seattle.
Yeah. So, that's that. There is some history between Michigan and UW we should talk about. They actually were in the Seattle Regional 4 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
You remember that, yep.
Wasn't there a delay in one of the games?
Maybe,
something?
I don't really remember. But that wasn't very competitive.
No.
The Huskies dismissed Michigan pretty easily in that series. And obviously 4 years later, the teams are basically entirely different.
Yeah.
They've played twice with something resembling these current rosters. Once in 2019 and once in 2020 out in Fullerton, California, the Judy Garman Classic. Michigan won in 2019, 4-2. That was a fascinating game. I remember it. I was doing a game at Chrysler when that game was going on, and Michigan won 4-2. Gabby Plain didn't pitch that game. Pat Moore did. She's the backup this year. And was that at that point,
who
too.
Who you don't think we'll see.
No. So Michigan did their job against Pat Moore, got four runs. Bobian had a lot of trouble, but worked through it and only allowed two runs. That game is famous for the Natalia Rodriguez home run, the only home run of her collegiate career. And at that point, her first extra base hit in college in her third season at Michigan.
Oh.
It was one of the most shocking things. Not just that she hit a homer, but that she hit it off Washington.
Yeah.
Was very surprising. But that was one of the signature wins Michigan had that year. Then they played again last season in the Judy Garman Classic. I was there, and it was a Sunday morning game, if I remember correctly. It was a morning game, I think 11 or 10 a.m. Pacific. And Michigan had come off some rough performances the day before. Starocco was really struggling. And Washington, I think, was number one or number two in the country at the time. And I remember we walked into the ballpark and saw Starocco was starting. And we were like, well, this game's over. Like, this, there's no shot of winning this game.
Yeah.
And she gave up a grand slam in the first inning. And then Michigan kind of committed to not really trying in this game by putting Chandler Dennis in. And she gave up, I think, five in the second. And it was just kind of over before it started. But
was it a run rule?
It was, yeah. It was 10-2 was the final. But here's the important thing.
Okay.
Michigan faced Gabby Plain in that game. And they got two runs off of her in five innings. If they can do that, if they can get two runs off of her in five innings this weekend, they've got a shot to win.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, can you get clutch hits? Can you scratch them across? Or you're going to need your pitching to do the work. You know,
if you're going to beat a top five team in the country,
yeah.
you have to have maybe not a perfect game, but a very, very close to that.
Yeah. And Michigan, this is a strength-on-strength matchup. Michigan's got great pitching. Washington's got great hitters. Sometimes your pitchers just take over. Michigan baseball can tell you something about that.
Yeah.
And so we're going to find out what Starocco and Megan Bobian are made out of. They're going to need both. They're going to need both to play really well. And they're going to need Bump and Allen to keep power hitting. That's how you get runs across, is big hits and big moments. So it's a tight series. And again, if Michigan's have a shot, you take care of Seattle on Friday. And then you play a best 2 out of 3 Saturday and Sunday against a great team. And if Michigan makes the Supers, they'll have earned it.
It just almost baffles my mind that they have to beat Washington and Oklahoma just to make the College World Series.
If they beat both of those teams, they're the favorite for the College World Series.
I mean, you'd
have
to be at that point.
Yeah. So I think if you could just somehow come out of this weekend alive, you'd be fine getting smoked by Oklahoma. I think it would be a successful season regardless.
40 other teams already have, or I guess 40 games anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a lot that happened this weekend. There will be a bunch of games coming up this next weekend. I assume that you said Michigan's on one of the ESPNs
on
Friday.
ESPN2, and I think they'll be on a cable channel most of the weekend.
I would believe
because
that if they played Washington, they'd be on
ESPN. Yeah, those
are
two sort of marquee teams, big programs. You know, you're not going to put Oklahoma Tulsa on ESPN2, so.
Well, you could, but I also believe that Michigan baseball is going to be on Big Ten Network.
They're on all, TV every game the rest of the year.
I think so. I think that is correct, yes. So, plenty to look forward to next weekend. Let's take a little bit of a break, and we'll come back and talk about another big tournament that has just started.
If you're looking for a personalized real estate experience, your choice should be a familiar name, Team Weintraub at Homeshore Realty. Whether you are a buyer, seller, or renter, my wife, Sherry Weintraub, will cater to your specific needs. She is a proud Michigan mom who serves the university community and beyond. She has been in the area for over a quarter century and working in the industry for over 20 years. Homeshore Realty, your hometown realtor, and Team Weintraub, where you're not just a dollar sign to us. Online at teamweintraub.com.
Build off of last week's second segment where we broke down all of the Michigan players on different teams and what their futures sort of look like as just a little bit in careers, but with the teams in their playoffs, we thought it would be a good idea to return to our roots of the hockey cast and talk about some NHL hockey as the NHL hockey playoff tournament has started, a couple days ago now, Saturday night?
Saturday. Was regular season game. Isn't over, though. Flames and Canucks are still going.
For the next week?
No, just it ends on Wednesday.
Three more games of meaningless.
Last night's game was wild. The Flames were up 5-1 in the third, and the Canucks came back to tie it.
What?
And it went to overtime.
I mean, what do you even do with those games? there's other actual playoff games going on, and...
Well, that game was at 10:30 after the playoff game.
Oh, that's true,
and then
yeah.
This week, their games are at 3 in the afternoon.
What did Quinn Hughes do in that game?
He had a couple of assists.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did he give up any odd man rushes?
Not really. It was all the other defensemen that were bad for Vancouver.
Surprise. All right. So we'll go division by division, I think. I'm not sure how long this will take, but I'm sure we'll each have some takes on different teams and series. And I don't know. Maybe we'll get to some predictions in the end or we won't. We'll see. So we'll start in the East. And we have two series. Both of them have already started.
We're not allowed to give predictions now because... Those series have already started, yeah.
I don't know.
It's
you can
cheating.
Just bake it in. the Caps and Bruins started the playoffs off on Saturday night. They are the 2 and 3 seed. The other two teams are the Islanders and Penguins. And I'm going to say that just as a startup to all of this, I don't think the Islanders are the same team as everyone else, but everyone else seems sort of like the same. I mean, they all end up with like the same points.
Yeah.
And like the matchups, did it even really matter? I mean, home ice is going to matter as more and more fans are being allowed in and that sort of stuff. But like, it just seems like a bunch of cards just got dealt and okay.
Yeah, I kind of feel that way. I mean, I think that both of these series will go very, very deep into their respective.
Well, both went to overtime in the first game.
That is true. You know, the Caps, I think the worry at the moment is the fact that you had Craig Anderson playing in goal on Saturday night after Vitek Vanecek.
He had a couple awkward sequences.
I mean, Craig Anderson is tan-tested and ready, but he also hasn't been really an NHL-caliber goalie in a few years.
Yeah.
And you have Ilya Samsonov on the COVID list, and you don't really know what's going on with that. And now Vanecek might be hurt. We're not sure what's
happening.
Did you
see
there.
That? I mean, that
it
looked
was very odd.
It didn't look like that's something that he's just going to come back from. They also made a goalie move afterwards. They recalled someone from the AHL.
People were riled up about Kelly Rudy ripping Vitek Vanecek on Hockey Night in Canada's panel after the game.
He ripped him?
Yeah, he was saying that Vitek Vanecek didn't properly stretch and that blah, blah, blah. That's why
how would you
it.
Know?
Well, Kelly Rudy was an NHL goalie, so it's
okay,
not
did he watch his like warm-ups?
I don't
mean,
know.
Like, how do you know that?
I have no idea. People okay. were fired up.
All right.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, this is going to be a tight series, I think, but you never really know. I mean, the Bruins were on fire to close out the season.
Yeah.
And
well, after the Hall trade, right?
Well, the Bruins did the thing you're supposed to do at the deadline, which is make your team better.
Yeah.
And all these teams sat on their hands or gave up a seventh for a terrible defenseman. And
the Islanders got two guys.
The Islanders did. This division was the one division that got the message.
Yeah.
And
even the Penguins went out and got Jeff Carter.
Yeah. And the Bruins went out and they got some real pieces in Riley on the defense. And then, you know, Hall offensively. And that kind of kickstarted the team. They've been playing really well down the stretch. But the Caps have got a lot of fight in them. And I'm excited to see how this series goes.
Yeah, I mean, the first game looked super even, and the goal was actually kind of a garbage, fluky goal, right?
Yeah.
Where the puck gets shot. Literally couldn't have been positioned better. Hits him in the chest, drops down between his legs, and then he pulls his right pad in, which pushes the puck between his legs into the net.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever seen that happen before.
Yeah, that was a very odd goal, is what I'll say.
But it was really tight. It was, what, 1-0, 1-1, 2-1, and then
yeah.
There was no real big leads. I like you said, I think the series is kind of going to be like that. It's going to be a fun series. Both those teams have played each other, not only this year, but in the playoffs in the past. I mean, this whole division is like that. I mean, a lot of the divisions are like that, but this division specifically is a bunch of teams that have played each other a ton of times. They're really tight. There's not a whole lot of, like, discrepancies to take advantage of.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Islanders and Penguins. We can transition a little bit to that one. You know, the Islanders are, they're not like the sexy pick. They're not the fun team to watch, but they play good defense. They usually get good goaltending. Trotz is one of the best coaches in the league, probably. And if they can put the puck in the net, they're going to be tough for anybody to beat.
I mean, here's what I dislike. I dislike how the Islanders are a likable team in the sense that they don't have much success in the last three decades, and you want to see them beat teams that have won cups recently.
Fair.
Which is their division. Unfortunately, they play a style that should be banned and is just horrific to watch. So I don't like cheering for them. So I'm kind of agnostic about this division. But what I'll say is
can
that
you
the
root
Islanders
for Crosby and the Penguins?
No.
You can't? Why? What's the hang up there? I don't.
They've already won three cups.
Okay.
That forecloses you from being cheered for.
I mean, Ovechkin's won one. The Bruins have won one.
Yeah, one is less than three.
Man, you're good at math too, just like me, Alexander.
Anyway, you know, the Islanders, they play a tight style. I was surprised they won that game yesterday when they had multiple leads and couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean,
true.
I thought they'd take these leads, especially that one with 4 minutes to go. It was like this: they're putting the clamps on, this game is over. But I thought there were some shaky goals allowed by Sorokin.
Really? I thought he was actually better than Jari.
Jari was not great either. But I thought that tying goal was a little questionable.
Far post, man.
But anyway, you know, I think that the Islanders are a good team, and I think they've been underestimated the last few weeks. Teams go through slumps, but it's kind of the thing we talk about with the NCAA tournament, where you look at the historical data, it doesn't really, there's no real bearing on whether a team is hot or cold and how they do in the tournament.
Yeah.
And I think they can easily turn it on. And, you know, Kyle Palmieri down the stretch did nothing after being a trade deadline acquisition and then comes out yesterday with a vengeance. So
I tweeted that, like, he saved all his goals for the playoffs.
Yeah. So I think it'll be an interesting series. And the Islanders have had the number of the Penguins in recent years.
Yeah.
Wiping them out 2 years ago. And, of course, they made quick work of the Capitals last year, too. So this is a team that knows how to be a giant killer. And, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's this division more than any other. Just looks like you have about four teams that are about the same. And maybe they aren't coin flips, but it's very, very tough to see what's going to happen. I will say that whichever team wins this division, unless there are a lot of upsets, I probably put near the bottom of the team that I think has the best chance to win in the Final Four.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I think it's probably maybe the deepest division, but the highest end.
Deepest among
the
four teams that made the playoffs.
Yeah. So we can switch over to the Central, where one of the series has not started yet, probably the series that I'm going to know almost nothing about, but the other series started last night in an absolutely bonkers game.
The
Battle of Florida, who two teams that traditionally have not been great. The Lightning have been better. They've been better in this decade, but they went through stretches where they were abjectly terrible.
In the 2000s, but they also won a cup in that decade.
Right. In the 90s, they were terrible.
Sure, they were an expansion team.
And, well, same with the Panthers. And the Panthers have had about two and a half good years since they've come into existence. So they've never played in the playoffs, and now you're getting this, I guess, like Florida hockey love going, because
yeah, it was great. It was really nice to see that the Panthers went out and got paid actors to wear jerseys and pretend that they're Panthers fans.
They probably were fans this year.
That game was shocking how many fans were there fired up in jerseys. I'm like, man, these are some really good actors. Like, why aren't they at any of the games?
You didn't even watch it.
Well, I'm not a Panthers fan.
Okay.
I'm not from Miami.
But the game was intense, and it was up and down.
So, you know, this is great because both teams have a ton of skill, right? I mean, that Huberdeau goal.
That was one of the best goals I've seen.
Not the one he scored, but the one he set up to tip it.
The pass was sick.
I mean, he's got crazy vision. Barkov has been a monster all year long. He was fifth in my heart ballot. And, you know, they've got some other really good players. I mean, Uyghur is one of the most underrated defensemen, and Bobrovsky used to be a star.
Is he the most overpaid goalie?
Oh, yeah. No
By
question.
Far?
Yeah. I mean, he's not the best goalie on their team, but they're starting him because of cap reasons.
Are you serious?
I mean, they're not starting Driedger, and Driedger's been better all year.
That is
but
it.
So it's kind of the sunk cost fallacy, right? They're like, well, we're paying him $10 million. Might as well get something out of him.
Which...
But anyway.
I mean, he wasn't bad last night, was he?
I don't think he was bad last night, no. Yeah. But the Lightning just, you know.
Well, they're just stacked.
They just ooze skill. And with they get Kucherov back. They get Stamkos back. They have so much talent top to bottom. I still thought Hedman had a very poor game last night, but McDonough was extremely strong, set up two of the goals in that game with stretch passes to set up. And I wonder about Florida's defense, that's what I'll say, because they play such a rush-heavy style that's really breakneck down the ice, and that's how they got, you know, defeated last night. Two things, the rush and counterattack, giving up that shorthanded goal, and then the game winner to point, and then on the penalty kill, where they give up, was it three power play goals? So those are the two areas they got to clean up, is the transition, and they have to stay out of the box.
Not taking penalties, especially against Tampa. So speak to the Tampa situation for me, because Kucherov doesn't play all year and is now eligible for the playoffs, and he doesn't count against the cap?
The cap is not in effect in the playoffs.
So why is Florida playing Bobrovsky then if the cap doesn't matter?
No, I didn't say that. I didn't mean that in the cap way. I meant that in the sense that they gave him a huge contract, so they feel like they need to play him to justify the contract.
You can spend $200 million on guys in the playoffs.
That would be a lot of people you'd have to put on LTIR to then bring up for the playoffs.
But theoretically, you can do that.
Theoretically, you could do that.
Why is that allowed?
It's a loophole. I don't think people were thinking very much.
Will it be closed very soon?
Well, they just signed a new CBA and it wasn't in there, so it might be a little bit, unless they amend it.
They would have to
amend
it. Right?
This kind of thing has happened before. I mean, the Blackhawks barely played Kane in the 2014-15 season, and then he came in the playoffs. It's a thing that probably shouldn't exist, but the cap should be higher than it is, unfortunately. It's not, and teams are going to do what they can to get around that. I mean, the Maple Leafs are doing it too, magically bringing Riley Nash off the LTIR right in time for the playoffs. So a lot of teams are doing it, and if you're not, you're just behind the game, right? It's kind of like paying recruits.
Yeah. I should say we're going to get to teams like the Knights and the Avs a little bit later, and even Toronto. But as far as just straight up individual talent, player by player by player down a roster, it's tough to find more than in Tampa, is it not?
All depends on what they get from their defense. They've got the goalies, and when you have Kucherov and Stamkos there, there are a few teams with better forwards. Their defense has been in a funk all year long. If they can get McDonough and Sergachev and Hedman to play like they did last year, then yes. But that's the thing I would worry about. And I give Florida credit. You know, we didn't know what the Tampa was going to look like with all of their big guys back. And the Panthers held serve with them and were better at 5-on-5. Probably should have won the game. I think they're kicking themselves about all those power play goals they ceded.
And they finished ahead of them in the standings, so it's not like they didn't.
Well, but Tampa didn't have all their guns. I mean, my point was that against a fully loaded Tampa team, the Panthers look like they can win the series. Unfortunately, they're starting from behind the eight ball now, down 1-0.
Well, this game is probably always going 6 or 7 anyway, or
sure.
Series, I would
say.
The other series in this division, Nashville and Carolina, this is the one division I watched almost nothing of the entire year. Nashville was dead, and then they were alive, and then they're dead, and now they're back alive, I guess, and they've made the playoffs. I'm guessing that this series is not going to go very long, though, given Carolina.
Nashville was going to be the big trading partner at the deadline, and then completely reneged on that and decided they were not selling, and I can't help but think that they are the 2014 Detroit Red Wings in that they need to move towards, at the very least, reloading, if not rebuilding their roster.
They need to get worse so they can get better.
They have a lot of assets that could have gotten them a lot of picks and a lot of prospects, and they decided not to do that for the 8th seed in the playoffs. So that they can
maybe the 16th season in the playoffs.
So that they can keep the fans interested. I mean, that's pretty much what was said, with basically that they've, in their 9 straight playoff appearances or whatever it is now, they've built a really loyal fan base that's created a new hockey market, and they feel that if they go into a rebuild, fans will just stop caring and we'll go back to watching the Titans. And
that aren't playing in March and April.
And that therefore they going into a full-scale burn it down rebuild is too risky, even though I think it's the only logical thing to do.
Everyone has to do that at some point.
You're just delaying time right now, which is what the Red Wings did.
For a few 8 seeds.
So what I will say is that I think they're a more dangerous team than people believe.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because the reason they got to this point is goaltending, and goaltending only.
Which is weird, because wasn't that the reason they didn't win the Cup?
UC Saros was phenomenal down the stretch. By the end of the year, he was a top-5 goalie in the season-long metrics. He's just been phenomenal and has dragged them forward. And here's the other thing. They've got a ton of experience. Got a lot of guys who have played deep in the playoffs, who've played a ton of playoff games. I mean, this is not the 2009 Blue Jackets or the 2015 Jets who are just like, hey, we're just happy to be here. You know, this is the first time we've made the playoffs in 10 years, and we're not threatening, but we're just happy to be here for the ride.
Yeah.
This is a team that's built to win now with players who have been to the Cup final before with a hot goalie. That's not a pushover in my mind. So I think the Canes win because I think they're a great team, but I think it's 6 games.
Okay. Well, that might be a little too close for comfort.
Could be.
So that's the Central. We will move. I was going to go to the North, but they're not even completely done yet. So we can go.
They're done.
They're done. We can go to the North then. So the 1-4 is going to be Toronto Montreal, which you are so happy about.
We have waited so long.
Will this garner the highest ratings in Canadian sports history?
No, because nothing will ever top that 2010 gold medal game.
That was one game. I'm talking about like over the course of a series. Like,
Leafs made the playoffs, that would smash it. But I mean, not the playoffs, the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, Cup finals.
I mean, this is a dream for TSN and Sportsnet. that's what I'll say.
But will it last long enough?
I've seen a lot of people who think this is going to be a 6 or 7 game series. Maybe.
How?
But I just haven't seen anything from the Canadians the last several months. They might be getting Brendan Gallagher back, which they desperately need because their late-season funk can be completely attributed to his injury. And they came out hot this season. Mm-hmm. They beat the Canucks like 10 times in 12 games to begin the year and then just haven't been very good for the rest of the season and really haven't. When they've played the Leafs, there hasn't been a lot there that I've thought, like, wow, this is a dangerous team at all. So maybe it could happen, but I think that Toronto was a really, really good team, and I just struggle to see where Montreal really has much of an advantage anywhere, or where the it would be have to be a complete meltdown on Toronto's end for Montreal Montreal to win.
The Achilles heel of Toronto is probably going to potentially be their lack of experience in goaltending, right? I mean,
could be, yeah.
So it's Montreal is going to have to hope for shootouts.
Maybe.
Not like an actual shootout, yeah, but like where there are a lot of goals for either teams. I mean, is that...
But the thing is, Montreal doesn't really score. I mean, they don't have any primary play drivers. That's kind of their problem, is that they have a lot of okay players. But
so are they the worst team in the playoffs?
I would say yes.
Okay.
I think they're just extremely mediocre. They've got a lot of guys who are okay. They don't have a lot of weak spots, but they don't have any impact players. Hmm. And so
they're just going to kind of be there until they're not anymore.
I think they take a game in there, but I just don't really see this as a very competitive series in my mind.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing. I kind of am starting to wonder about the other series, the 2-3 with the Jets and the Oilers. My one question is, will there be any defense? And the second thing is that, is this basically Hellebuck versus McDreisaitl?
I mean, the Jets late in the year seemed like they had a shot to win the division, and then just...
Late?
Yes,
I think in the middle
with about
of the year.
10 games left, and then they just fell flat on their face in the last 10 games.
Yeah,
and went totally belly up. But again, I don't really put a lot of stock into how hot or how cold a team is a lot of times. And they've got the talent to beat the Oilers, and they have a really good goalie. But I think the Oilers do too. I think Mike Smith's had a great season, and I've seen the Oilers play some really structured hockey against the Jets. So I think that's something to watch for. Both these teams are going to have their coaches really trying to drill those fundamentals into them. But the Oilers have played very, very well. They have the best player on the ice at all times.
Me too.
I think that the Oilers are favorite, but I think this is going to be a lot of fun. I mean, I think this is a much more fun series than Montreal-Toronto.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
by the way, what could break the Montreal-Toronto record for ratings is Toronto-Edmonton.
Toronto-Edmonton could be a lot of fun, assuming that Edmonton gets to that point too, which we think they probably will, but what do you think?
I'm picking the Oilers, but I could see the Jets winning. Wouldn't shock me.
All right. I think so far, like, of all the series that we've talked about, I would say, we've talked about six series, and I would say five of them are easily, there's some intrigue to all of them, depending on what you think about Nashville-Carolina, but the other ones are worth going to following the entire series because they're going to be pretty, there are definitely a number of storylines. Going out west, it still stays interesting. The Avs and Knights have basically gone back and forth all year for the lead in this division, and more or less with the Lightning in Carolina with the number one team in the NHL. The Avs were trailing basically until the final game where they beat Vegas three games to go, which gives them the tiebreaker, and because of their COVID issues, they had games against the Kings to end the season, and they end up blowing through the Kings in two games and winning a tiebreak that sees both teams finish 82. So the Avs finish number one in the West and number one in the NHL. Vegas finishes number two in the West and number two in the NHL, which is a very weird scenario there.
Yeah. Vegas blew it. I mean, they had a home game. All I needed to do was win that one game against Colorado, and they were going to get the number one spot.
Well, did you see the miss by Tuck on that 2-on-0?
Yeah.
Where he just shoots wide of an open net? I mean, that was it, right?
Well, and I still don't know why Leonard was in that game instead of Fleury. And
that was a curious decision. But they've been alternating, right?
Yeah, but I think you have to go with your best guy to win the big game, because I just think that that was such a huge game. They needed to win that game badly, because the Wild is going to be an absolute battle, and they're already now down 1-0 in the series. So they've had trouble with the Wild all year long.
Yeah, so let's talk about that series, because that was the one that I think Vegas really wanted to avoid, because, and that's why leading the division for the majority of the stretch run, they were going to avoid Minnesota, because Minnesota was probably going to be 3, maybe 2 if they pass Colorado, but But for whatever reason, the one team that has given Vegas a bunch of fits has been Minnesota. They went 5-1-2 against them. Now, and those two were in overtime. So, I mean, it easily could have been 7-1.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas won regulation win against Minnesota. They just can't figure it out. And that game yesterday was wild. It was fascinating because
the wild.
Yeah, because Vegas massively outshoots Minnesota, but the Wild end up having, I think, the much better chances. And Fleury keeps them in that game. I mean, that was one of the best games I've ever seen him play. I mean, he stopped like 8 breakaways or odd man rushes.
Yeah.
It was just crazy. And I've said that I like the way Vegas plays, but I just wonder about their defense. I don't think Alec Martinez is very good defensively. I have questions about McNabb. Petrangelo, of course, had the turnover that led to the game winner. I don't know. They play a breakneck style, a lot of rushes, and like with Florida, that's the potential weakness is the counter punches or when you can swarm them on the forecheck. And Marcus Foligno produces the turnover, and they strike in overtime, and the Wild win the game. And
I mean, you think
game two is going to be fascinating.
You think Vegas is going to win the series, don't you?
I still do, but I think it's going to go to 7.
You think it's going to go 7. Do you? The thing that I've been reading in other places is that the Knights sometimes struggle with finishing, and that's their biggest weakness. You mentioned defense. I see what you're saying about defense because I've watched them a number of games, obviously seeing them play the Avs and then other teams in the West. But
the other thing about Vegas is that when you look at their record, it's people like to talk about the North Division and whatever. Vegas just padded like crazy in the West. I saw the stat. They went, I think it was like 25-5 against the teams not, you know, the four that made the playoffs, the four California teams and Arizona.
Yeah.
I mean, they just ran up the score against those teams, struggled against the Wild, played the Avs even, and were solid against the Blues. But they got this crazy good record because
they just didn't lose the games that they shouldn't lose.
Yeah.
And but that's so, what a good team does.
It's what a good team does, no question. But they've got some weaknesses against really good teams. And the Wild, for whatever reason, is a team they just have struggled against. And Cam Talbot's had a great season. And he had a great game yesterday.
All right, well, we'll switch over and talk about the last series now. This is the 1-4, St. Louis and Colorado. Obviously, St. Louis is the reigning full-on Stanley Cup champions. Obviously, Tampa Bay won it last year in the bubble, but that's probably going to get an asterisk for a while anyway. But the last time there was a full-on playoffs in home venues, St. Louis won the Cup on the road in a Game 7. They still have a lot of the same types of players. Obviously, Petrangelo, like you said, is gone, went to Vegas. They brought in Torrey Krug. But a lot of their the netminder's still the same. A lot of their forwards are still the same. They still play a protect your goalie more or less defensive style. They do have some guys like Tarasenko and Perron that can score. But they have had their issues this year. And Binnington has been up and down. And they ended up finishing fourth by quite a bit. And for a while, were in a bit of a battle with the Coyotes for that fifth spot. Now, it ended up not being that close, but were they going to make the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, the Blues have been mired in a sort of season-long funk and just have struggled to break out of it at times. I still think they're an intriguing playoff team. The question is, can Binnington get right? You need him to pick you up.
And how good is he?
He was very good 2 years ago.
Was he, or was his structure really good?
He played really well that year, no question about that. But that's what goalies do. Goalies go through periods of time where they're up, and then they go through periods of time where they're down. Mm-hmm. And he's just struggled this year. But you look overall, I mean, between Tarasenko, Ryan O'Reilly, who I just absolutely love.
Yeah, he's a great player.
And they have some solid defensemen. They're a grinding team, very physical. They beat you up in the corners. And they've played some good games against the Avs this year.
Yes. Now, two of their wins against... they have 3 wins against Colorado. The first one was the first game of the season.
Yep.
The 2 other ones that they won, Colorado was down like 3 or 4 players.
Yeah.
And so they haven't played... And I don't think Grubauer was in net. So they were facing either Johansson or... Actually, they faced Johansson and Dubnyk probably more than they faced Grubauer
probably
this year.
Did. And Perron now on the COVID list is what's giving me pause there.
So he's going to miss tonight's game, game 1.
Yeah, I don't know what the story is with that.
Yeah, because there are different ways to get on the COVID list, and it's unclear as to like what category he falls in.
So I think Colorado's a really good team. I don't buy into some of the models that argue that Colorado is like the best team in the last 30 years. And
yeah, that's hard to prove. I mean, how do you?
I mean, I've seen some models that think that they are just out of this world good, which I think they're a really good team, and I think they have a great shot to win the Stanley Cup, but I don't know. I haven't really seen that. Obviously,
we also haven't seen them fully healthy.
That's one of the big questions.
Because last year they were looking really strong until they got in the middle of that Dallas series and everybody got hurt. They were on their third string goalie. They had lost, I think, three or four forwards and a defenseman or two. And you're basically playing with half of your AAA hockey team and, you know, you're going to lose to good teams. If they can stay healthy, I mean, they've beaten Vegas four times. They've more or less owned the Wild. They've beaten St. Louis again, except for those couple games when they were, like, completely depleted. They're going to have home ice. It's tough to see a lot. I'm trying not to be biased as an Avs fan. I'm trying to look at this from a hockey perspective. Their power, or I would say their penalty kill has dropped off from what it was, and their power play has not been the sharpest. But if they're fully healthy, it's tough for me to look at it and say, I mean, okay, they have Patrick Nemeth as their 6D man, so you can go get him. But other than that, I mean, they got Alex Newhook and JT Compher on their fourth line.
Yeah. Again, I think they're a really good team. I think they'll probably defeat the Blues in five is what I'll say.
Five is what you think?
Yeah, I don't think it's this pushover series the way some people do, but I do think that
they haven't blown the Blues out. They've won most of the games, but when they win the games, they're tight games, and then they earn the win. It's not like they don't, but it's not like a steamrolling series when you've seen them play the Kings or something like that.
Yeah.
What do you think of Colorado-Vegas?
I think it'd be a great series.
Do you think it should be played two rounds later?
I really, really want to see it.
And are you nervous now because of what the Wild did?
I think Wild would be fun. I mean, it's impossible to hate the Minnesota Wild. So if they're the team that knocks out Vegas, I won't be that angry.
Who do you like in a Colorado-Vegas series?
Ask me when it happens.
Well, hopefully we will get to see. Actually, from my perspective, I hope we don't get to see it. I will be for the Wild, personally. But from a hockey perspective, that would be a great series to see. And we can talk about it in a week or two when that happens. So those are the teams. Do you have anything else to add in terms of like a storyline we didn't hit or something that a bold prediction? It doesn't even have to be something of who's going to win this or that, but something that's going to happen that is going to draw your attention.
Not really. Just excited to see how it goes down, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
And most teams are upping their number of fans in the stands, so I think that will add a lot to the playoff atmosphere. It's always the first round is always one of the most fun rounds because there are, two and three, sometimes four games a night, so you can see a lot of the things that are going on. I mean, the overtimes, every game except for that game last night went to overtime, and the game winner last night was, in the 58th minute or 59th minute. So,
yeah,
a lot of good hockey, some Michigan players around, and there's going to be a lot of good sports from now for the next couple weeks, including some big Michigan softball, baseball games, and NHL playoffs.
Yep. Hockeycast 3.24. Come back next week where we'll be breaking down Michigan in the Super Regionals of the NCAA Softball Tournament.